everyone, and welcome to this, the fourth episode of this six-part Dexcom-sponsored series. This series is going to give you the opportunity to develop your understanding of and confidence using and prescribing real-time continuous glucose monitoring devices for your patients. Today, we're going to be discussing the role of the specialist dietitian in diabetes management, especially focusing on the way that real-time CGM can assist people with their dietary choices and how this can help motivate people living with diabetes. I am really, really overjoyed to be joined by a special guest today. That's Leslie Hamilton. Leslie, please introduce yourself for our listeners.
Thanks, Adam. My name is Leslie Hamilton, and I'm one of the diabetes dietitians in the Western Trust in Northern Ireland. And for my sins, I'm also the Diabetes Network Coordinator, which is a very fancy title, but we really just try to keep the diabetes service going by me linking everybody together.
Brilliant. So enough to keep you busy then.
Just about.
So you're a dietitian. I suppose this podcast is generally aimed at those in primary care. What is a dietitian?
I would refer to myself as a diabetes dietitian. So a dietitian works with people who live with diabetes, all types of diabetes. So there can be dietitians who are delivering diabetes prevention programs, diabetes education programs, such as Desmond for type 2 or the Daphne program maybe for type 1. But a dietitian is the person who will have that conversation with someone living with diabetes and talk to them about what role the food choices have on their diabetes management and how their food choices have an impact on their day-to-day glucose.
So I suppose the other thing is you're not the only professionals that work in the kind of lifestyle field. You've got dietitians, there's nutritionists. What's the big difference, I suppose, between a dietitian and a nutritionist?
Well, I suppose as a dietitian, we study nutrition as well. So most of the dietitians will study nutrition and dietetics. But a dietitian will be state registered and part of the health service. So we follow the code of conduct for the HCP, so we are all registered within the NHS. And yes, you're right, we do work alongside the diabetes specialist nurses. Sort of my role when I started in diabetes was linking in with the multidisciplinary team, with podiatrists, diabetes specialist nurses, and initially we would have worked alongside the GP practice clinics, which unfortunately we weren't able to continue just with the resources. There's not too many of the diabetes dietitians about. So sometimes the service has have to change so that you're working with sort of more complex patients. But you're right, I mean the dietary messages can come from the whole multidisciplinary team and practice pharmacists, practice nurses, GPs. And it is so important. I always feel that we're sharing the same message and continually highlighting the importance of the food choices in that day-to-day picture for diabetes.
Wonderful. So before we get into the nitty-gritty, I suppose it's worth asking for you, why diabetes? What made you get into diabetes when you kind of became a specialist?
I think I fell into it, like a lot of people usually say. Just my jobs from qualification, I wouldn't say it was one of the standout things during my training, but my first few jobs, I always was covering the diabetes clinic. And one of my roles was in the Causeway Trust in Northern Ireland. In the Causeway Trust, it would be the first time that I would have worked solely with the diabetes team. And that really gave me a true taste of the whole multidisciplinary approach. And I just loved it. Right across the board, type 1 and type 2, education just really is my passion, both education for healthcare professionals who are working in diabetes so that we're all saying the same messages and not contradicting each other, because sometimes that can lead to so much confusion. But patient education for diabetes, I feel, is so important, and it really is my baby at the minute in the Western Trust. So we try to deliver update sessions and so on just to fit in with the ongoing service.
Brilliant. Yeah, well, education is so important in managing diabetes. I suppose I'd be remiss if I didn't ask, how do you think real-time CGM can really help education of for people living with diabetes? Do you think it has a bigger role to play or not?
I think it has a huge role to play. I think it's such a game changer. Even whenever, for example, someone with type 2 diabetes, maybe at diagnosis has a very high HbA1c and it's really symptomatic. Long time ago, we weren't even able to offer regular blood glucose testing for those patients. Yes, the recommendations now are to start the blood glucose testing at an earlier stage if things are very high, just even to get the reassurance that the treatment that they're on is working. But from an education point of view, the patients learn so much from the effects of food choices, the portions they're taking, their activity. So real-time CGM gives so much more of a picture rather than that just one-off measurement that they're doing. But sometimes it can give too much information as well and cause a bit of anxiety.
Well, that was going to be my next question, funny enough, Leslie, is there a chance around that overwhelming nature, or do the positives of having that access kind of outweigh that risk as such?
For me, I think in practice, a wee bit of preparation with the patient who's in front of you and, you know, talking to them about, you know, what to expect or what they're going to see. Because sometimes if they're seeing the glucose patterns, as you've mentioned as well, Adam, previously, you know, when, you know, if they're seeing these huge curves or the levels going up to levels that they probably never realised before, it can cause a lot of anxiety for them. Whereas if they've only been maybe monitoring their blood glucose in the morning and maybe before their evening meal, those two readings give a very different picture to what they're going to see with the continuous glucose monitoring. So I think a bit of preparation so that they know these curves are normal. Yes, there's levels that we're looking for, but how they can learn a wee bit more about their management and insulin adjustment and activity. And for me, it's the clear link between the portions of food that they're taking and the types of foods that they're taking. They can learn so much more. It's maybe information we've been trying to explain to them for years, but whenever they see it in real terms, it makes such a difference.
It does, yeah. And I suppose for the people listening, what kind of patterns do, maybe especially things around diet choices? Let's say for my lunch today, I had a cheese sandwich on white bread and a packet of crisps. If I was living with diabetes, what would you expect me? I'm not on any insulin right now. What would you expect my profile to look like?
Well, you're going to see a rise in your glucose levels, and probably a fairly quick rise with the white bread. But that's where we would start to be able to just go more in depth with the education as to maybe when they change to granary bread, perhaps, or maybe if they have the sandwich first and keep the crisps to a wee bit later on, they'll start to see that has a different impact. But I think we need to focus on sort of the food choices as individual choices, as to what the person in front of us is able to do or is willing to do, and asking permission to discuss that as well. They're maybe quite happy with her food choices, but if they're wanting to make improvements or help to improve that pattern, that's where we can start to see what different food choices or what different types might come into it. So, but you're right, you know, something like, you know, a sandwich and fruit, they're still going to see the same glucose rise because of the total carbohydrate value maybe. So it's how we can start to support the patient to make sort of small changes to their eating pattern, but still manageable changes for them. That helps to explain it a wee bit.
No, absolutely, absolutely. And do you think having access to that data, whilst, yeah, for some patients it could be overwhelming, agree, for those that maybe haven't been quite as motivated before, Do you think that really seeing the kind of graphically the implications of their food choices, can that sometimes get them over the line, do you think, to say, yeah, okay, now's the time for me to make better choices?
I think nothing beats the real evidence in front of you. Part of the education that I would do with patients is talking about the different types of carbohydrate foods, and yes, maybe the slow release versions as opposed to the very refined foods. But you and I both know it's the portions of carbohydrate that we're really trying to spread out a wee bit more over the day. And for those people on insulin, then it's for them to know how much insulin is balancing that meal, and how we can start to support with dose adjustment. Because I think for a lot of the type 2 patients that I have known, there's a bit of anxiety with changing their doses. They're happy for the nurse or whenever they come to clinic and get that reassurance, but maybe on a day-to-day basis, even making those small changes with their doses for different meals is a big step for a lot of people. So yes, the evidence when it's in front of you is a great backup, and when we use it correctly, I think can be a great confidence booster for patients. But I suppose as a dietitian, what I'm trying to avoid is people saying, oh, I can never eat that again. If I had that white bread sandwich and a packet of crisps and my glucose went to that. It's not necessarily about labelling foods as good or bad or don't touch that again. It's maybe thinking about what could you do a wee bit different that will help to balance it a bit more.
Yeah, it's using the data in a really supportive way, isn't it, rather than as a big brother punishment kind of way.
Yeah, and I think, you know, even for patients that are starting on it with me, we're always reminding them that this is your diabetes, this is your glucose level. We will, you know, if you're happy to share the data with us, we will help you to work through it and make some sense of it. But we have to have the patient's permission to do that. And I think it's important to highlight that we're not sitting as a diabetes team watching some screen waiting for the spike to come up, that it's not Big Brother.
Pick up the phone, quick.
Yeah. Stop eating that.
Yes.
But it's just another tool to try and empower someone and give them more confidence and knowledge. They will gain a lot more knowledge of the effects of different foods.
Leslie, I think that's a wonderful point to end the podcast on. All about patient empowerment, people taking control of their own diabetes, giving them the tools and the support that they need. So thank you ever so much for your time today, Leslie.
Thanks, Adam.
I know I certainly enjoyed our conversation. I hope our listeners did. And yes, thank you all. Take care.